Good afternoon.
Welcome to Why Is This a Thing? Across the table from me, Adam Hall. On the other line, the recently betrothed Nick Evangelista. Damn straight.
Hey, that's Nick. Nicholas Brown now. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I got married. Nico, you got new eyes.
Yeah. Adam, I got nothing.
You're here.
I'm Adam, around, guys.
Round of applause for Adam.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm very proud of myself.
It's been a busy weekend.
Yeah. New wife. New eyes and same old Adam. Yeah,
I was gonna say new wife. It was much better than his last one. We don't talk about Nick's last wife. Yeah.
A guy that I know that Nick also knows refers to his wives as or his current wife as his current wife because I think Nick, you know who I'm talking about, but you always gotta gotta stay one step ahead of that, man.
Right. Does he also refer to women as broads too?
No, but you know, maybe the current broad.
The current
those
broad.
Alimony payments, man, yeah. They come at you fast.
Well, I should make the announcement now. So now that I'm married, this will be my last episode. In true Why Is This a Thing fashion.
Yeah. Damn.
No, I'm just kidding.
Some broad came around and ruined your guy time.
That was fast.
Wow. Two-thirds of what this podcast started as 6 years ago are married.
Yeah.
What? That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I think it's pretty cool.
It's called getting old.
Yeah.
And I can't see, or I can see. I no longer need glasses. What a world.
Yeah.
What a world.
Shit's changing.
Highly recommend vision. Would you recommend marriage, Nick?
Yeah, so far it's been nice.
Yeah.
So you know, far? Everywhere you go on your wedding weekend, by the way, you just tell everyone you're married. Just tell everybody. You go to the bar, you tell them you got married. Just be like, oh, we just got married yesterday. Oh, well, you know, you don't have to pay for that drink now.
I was just about to ask that. How much shit did you not pay for? I'm imagining most of it.
No, I mean, I paid for most of it. For most of it, but
you weren't going to the right places.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right.
That's a hell of a discount.
It was a great weekend. And I imagine we will talk about it in depth on Two Cents Radio or something like that.
Yes. Listen to that show.
So maybe Adam, if you want to hop on that episode or something, so you're not left out of the conversation.
That's the old bait and switch right there.
You want me on Two Cents?
No, we need him listening to it. We got to bump those numbers up, man.
Okay. Well, so Adam, if you want to go ahead and subscribe to Two Cents Radio.
Oh, I see.
On your podcast network of choice.
Give that a sub. On all platforms, actually.
Really, whatever platform you like.
I've never heard of Two Cents before. Is it any good?
No.
No.
No? No.
Could be the worst podcast on the internet. I don't know if there's a worse one than that. Man, Two Cents is a wild thing, isn't it? It's just like one of those things in my life that's like, don't know how it started. And
we've been doing it for 8 years. Would not recommend. Something like that. Like,
no, it's crazy because like people I know will listen to it and they'll be like, what's the deal with that show? like I get like the other ones, they have like a premise and there's a format or there's a theme or, you know, there's a reason for you to press play if you've never pressed play before, you know, whereas Two Cents, it's none of that. It's just 10 years of inside jokes.
Basically,
that no one will understand because we've been making them for 10 years and we never think to like stop and explain them. So it's a very wild thing. They're like, I don't really get that one. I'm like, and you shouldn't.
I mean, yeah, it's the ultimate. There is no premise. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the Norm Macdonald of podcasts. Oh. You know,
there you go.
He would have loved that show. You should. That would have been a good guest. A decent guest, we'll say.
I do think I model a lot of my podcasting sensibilities after Norm Macdonald.
What do you mean?
Well,
yeah, what the hell do you mean?
Making no sense moment to moment, I think, is kind of, you know, that's very Norm influenced.
I suppose.
And the maybe. Courage to like make something that no one will enjoy.
But a lot of people enjoy Norm.
He's a real hero.
He's a special kind of crazy. I don't know if Nico's that special.
No, I know. Please, I will. No, one will ever be that kind of crazy. Yeah. But
no, I don't even think Norm's crazy enough to get a discount on LASIK surgery, dude.
So that's actually a joke he would make. Would be like, be like, yeah, I want to get LASIK. I got a discount. That's the whole joke. That's the joke. It stops there. And then he moves on to a new topic completely and just doesn't bring it up again.
Yeah. Bob Saget was telling Norm stories because he was like one of his Norm's close friends or whatever, and so he's telling the story on the podcast of the first show, the first podcast that Norm and him did together. He invited Bob onto Norm McDonald Live, I think it was called, which is one of the great YouTube click holes if you haven't gone down that click hole. And so Bob comes in, like, he didn't tell him that it was going to be filmed. He just thought it was audio. So he just shows up and there's cameras all over the place. And he says to Bob, the first question out of his mouth goes, "So Bob, you like sucking big juicy cock?" And Bob's like, "This is the show?"
When you're too weird for Bob Saget, it's like, it's a special kind of weird.
I kind of feel like, I don't know, I kind of modeled my podcasting ethos, you know, after that model, you know.
I would love to see you do, like, attempt what he did to Larry David with the thing, the joke he made about the kid smashing eggs on his head. Jeez, I haven't laughed so hard in a very long time. Because you think the joke's going one way. I mean, you kind of know where it's going, but the way he drops the joke on you for that punchline.
Have you ever heard the professor of logic joke?
No.
He told?
No.
I don't know if I can tell it. I don't know if I can get away with telling it because it ends with a slur.
Oh, yeah, don't do it then.
I'll do it. I'm going to do it anyway.
I think you told me this joke in Florida.
Oh, I did. Yeah, we did on the car ride. Yeah, I probably can't tell it.
Let me just go over myself.
That's probably not a good one to... not for this program. Maybe that's more of a 2 cents joke, you know? That's not really
I see. This is the kid-friendly program.
Yeah, we're clean. We're clean on this program.
That's right. We're fucking cleaning up our acts over here. Anyway, you guys like sucking big juicy cock? Like what's
occasionally.
The deal? Okay.
It ain't so bad.
Strangely, okay. The bigger, the easier it is, you know?
Gives you something to grab onto, you know?
Right.
It's all about leverage, really.
The lower the expectations, you know what I mean? They're like, I know you're not getting that whole thing in there. It's okay. Just do your best. You know?
Also a part of my podcasting ethos.
Oh, man.
Doing this show is like sucking a big, juicy cock.
That reminds me of something.
Just do your best, guys.
That reminds me of something Phil Tippett once said about filmmaking. Do you know who Phil Tippett is?
I don't.
Phil Tippett is the special effects artist behind the AT-AT walkers in Star Wars,
okay,
and the bugs in Starship Troopers and all those like really iconic things that, you know, especially in stop motion.
Yeah.
And he's made a couple films, and one of my favorite quotes he ever gave, because he's a really difficult person. He said, "The best advice I ever got on filmmaking was from Milos Forman. And he said to me, making a movie is like taking a really good shit." And I'm like, okay,
it's true.
Yeah.
Listen, it's got to come out one way or the other. And it's either the easy way or the hard way, right?
But he said specifically a really good shit.
And then,
not a bad shit, a good shit.
Right. Well, ideally, I think it's a good shit.
I would hope it's a good shit, but it's still a shit.
Exactly. It's a relief, definitely.
I like it. There's no qualifier afterwards. It's like, that's the advice.
Yeah, it's like,
what does that fucking mean? I don't know. I guess you got to make a movie to find out.
Just the fact that it came from Milos Forman, and the guy who made One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Look at him, hey.
Yeah.
I love Milos, dude.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Milos, the Jim Carrey documentary, his scenes in the Jim Carrey documentary.
You have to give me a chance to make a movie. I don't need to make a movie.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right, let's do this. Hairspray. We did it last week. We're doing it again.
Yeah, the same movie. We're just talking about it again. That's really all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So the John Waters Hairspray.
Round two. This is the Hairspray that certainly people of our generation know as the definitive Hairspray. But, you know, I don't know. Like, do people think of it as a musical? Clearly we did.
But that's what this, right? This is what we thought we were going to get, essentially.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
This is a musical for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The 2007 Hairspray is actually musical. It's based on the musical, which is based on the 1988 film, which we did last week. So we're skipping the middleman here.
Yeah. Correct. We did not get a time machine, travel back in time, like 2004, and watch the stage version of Hairspray. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, yes.
And my understanding is that this is fairly similar to the musical. I think the music is the same music from the musical.
Yeah, they changed some of the lyrics, I think. But
well, and they also changed some of the plot, because
they did
at least one major thing is
different to the ending.
Yeah, the ending is distinctly not from the musical. That ending in the musical is the same as the ending in the original.
Got it.
So
fascinating.
With the bomb.
Well, I don't know about the bomb, actually.
I know. See, the one criticism I have coming out of this one. It's like, I need some more.
Yeah, where's the bomb? Terrorism.
I just need stakes. You saw
that opening where she's riding in the garbage truck and you thought, I see a bomb in the future.
As Alfred Hitchcock once said.
Oh, the bomb, yeah.
But always put a bomb underneath your lead wig. Actress's wigs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just some of his tricks to filmmaking.
Just like a little piece of Hitchcockian advice.
Right. Right.
How many Hitchcock films do you have a bomb in the wig? That's like a classic trope.
Too many.
Such it's a trope. You know, it's tired. Actually become kind of trite.
It is.
Yeah.
It's just so tired.
Be a little more experimental, Hitchcock. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, like, fucking, like, how many fucking leading ladies do you have to lose?
Yeah, put some dynamite in the cooch or something. Like, try something new.
Dynamite in the cooch.
Yeah, man, that's why South Park is pushing boundaries.
I was just about to say, what are you referencing? South Park shoving a bomb up Hillary's vagina? Is that what's going on?
God, how much more bodily mutilation you have to cause Grace Kelly before you move on?
Oh, man.
Yeah, speaking of moving on, let's move on.
Sure. You know, kind of like me after my wedding weekend, this movie, you know, feels very much the same, but just like a little different, you know. It's honestly kind of felt like the same movie.
I'll be honest, I was surprised in a lot of ways by how similar it was.
Yeah,
you know, I guess it's definitely a little more like fluffy and colorful in a way that first movie was not. It's far more like literally delightful for us. Like, I would say that first movie is more our kind of delightful. We're like, this is absurd, this is fun, absurd. Whereas like this movie is something you could, you know, show to some kids and it would be fine. You know,
I like how you say literally delightful, because this movie is more literally delightful, but it's less actually delightful.
yeah. I in a way, yeah. But like this movie is, I don't know. It's. I mean, God, what's a good comparison here? It. I don't know why I kept thinking about it. I just thought of like the dressing that movies like The Help have for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, there is that kind of mid-2000s prestige comedy sheen to it.
Yeah.
One of the, I think, like, tragedies of modern filmmaking is that, like, most studio comedies around a certain time just started looking the exact same. And you go back and you look at something like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World or Young Frankenstein or something, and it's like, oh shit, like comedy filmmakers were pushing the boundaries of the form before like the 70s, you know, before like Hollywood's new golden age. And now it's like you have unlimited budget and there's just so much room for content. There's just so many comedies that get churned out through the Hollywood system. And like every Melissa McCarthy movie looks like Spy, you know, like every Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg movie, you know, looks like Pineapple Express, right? And yeah, listen, I don't want to be critical of this movie. I think it looks good. I think like it's a good looking movie. It's colorful and it's well shot. And
like, technically,
I actually think, yeah, as a musical adaptation, I think like it's really strong.
Oh, it does its job for sure.
Does its job. But I understand what you're saying, whereas like comedies at a certain point, we just sort of ruled them out as cinematically viable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, especially now. I mean, honestly, there's just no good comedies. You know, it's been a long time since.
Well, it's not that there aren't good comedies and that they make you laugh. There's just not comedies that work as movies. You know, and if they are made as movies and they're good, it's like, why not just make this into a sitcom, you know?
Yeah. Where are the comedies, though? Like, what do we get every year is the thing. Like,
well, you get a Paul Feig movie, right? You know, you get a, I mean, and like, I think, again, that's my point is not that the jokes are bad, although in a lot of cases
bad,
they are.
Are you?
It's that they're just, there's no sort of physical invention or cinematic invention to it. Where I think maybe that's what I'm trying to say is that at a certain point, like, we stopped using the camera as a joke teller.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, it's just the writing at this point. It's just, they try to write funny jokes.
And it's just do like the shot, reverse shot, and just like get a couple wides and make sure you have enough coverage and we'll figure it out in the edit bay. And like the good comedy directors are, you know, okay, so the only guy still doing it is Edgar Wright, right?
Yes.
Edgar Wright is the only guy that's like, I'm going to make a horror movie, but it's going to be just a straight comedy. And I'm going to use all the cinematic techniques of a horror movie. Or I'm going to use all the cinematic techniques of a heist film, but it's going to be a comedy under the surface, right?
Yeah, we haven't had that in a long time. You know, like, he really is the only one that we still have. Yeah, you're right. Because, I mean, this is exactly what I was complaining about when we did Last Christmas. And I was just talking about how I just don't care about Paul Feig's style at all because it is just written joke telling. Wasn't that funny, that thing that she said? And then you move on to the next joke that's just a written joke and it's, you know, your mileage is going to vary on how funny you actually find that. Mm-hmm. Where it's like none of those movies that he has done are anywhere near as close to Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, or even The World's End, if I'm being perfectly frank. Yeah, it's been a while since we've had Monty Python, guys.
It has.
So
it's been a long time.
So
even though a lot of them are still around, it's like,
well, two of them are dead now.
It's true.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, even the Anchormans of the world,
even
the Mean Girls of the world. I think like these are all good movies.
But Cause Bad Habits, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I think so. I think it became very easy to just sort of, I mean, I guess to a certain extent, maybe Shane Black still does this, but he doesn't make straight comedies, right?
Is it kind of like they just like, okay, you're the comedian, you do your writing, I'm the filmmaker, I'll do the filmmaking, and we'll let the comedians be funny on the camera, but like the actual filmmakers making the movie, they're just so focused on making a technically good movie for the studio that they're not actually focused on making it funny? Is that part of the issue?
Well, no,
they just don't know how?
Well, it's a hard thing to pin down. Like, how do you describe, you know, it's hard enough describing what makes something funny, let alone what makes filmmaking funny, like physical filmmaking. Mm. That's a very hard thing to explain to people. You know, I'm sure the you know, people like the Zucker brothers did it brilliantly. But even then, I'm sure they would have trouble explaining it to you beat for beat. They're just creative with their, I don't know, visual ideas. I don't know.
Yeah, but they think in terms of visuals a lot of times.
Yes, exactly.
When they write their jokes
is
the point. Mm-hmm. And that used to be the standard. I mean, you go back all the way to like silent era and you can't speak, or at least if you do, the dialogue is very limited. So you have to be very economic with that real estate. And so the first resort had to be, how do we make this funny physically? How do we convey the laugh with a silly stunt? Whereas at some point, post talkie, right? And, and it's not like this was always the case. I mean, Billy Wilder was an incredible visual filmmaker and he was making the best studio comedies. I think at some point comedies sort of just became an avenue to tell jokes, and the directors that really embraced the material or were assigned to the material, whatever the case, were not cinematically minded. They were... You know, and you know, someone like Paul Feig, for example, comes from a comedy background, right? He comes from TV. He worked in The Office or whatever. And so, I think comedy is certainly a writer's medium now. And I think that's the larger problem. Maybe the sitcom era, that sort of was responsible for that wave, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's possible.
I think a good example of something that like does do this is like Horace and Pete, right? Obviously written by a comedian, directed by a comedian.
Yeah, that's a whole different animal, though. Like that. Louis C.K. wanted to be a filmmaker. He went to NYU film school. Like that's a guy that I think NYU, but he could be a filmmaker. He found comedy as sort of this thing that he was good at because he never thought that he would find somebody to.
Although didn't he suck at it for like a really long time?
For a very long time. Yeah.
So I don't know if you could really say he found something he was good at. He just stuck with something he was bad at instead of doing something else that he was bad at, I guess.
Yeah, filmmaking was always his passion, though. And also, like, his comedies, Louis and Horace and Pete or whatever, were not sort of broad studio comedies, too. Like, those are, like, very dark, sort of melancholic stuff.
No, but I think of, like, using the actual camera to be funny. I think of that one episode where we're just focused on that one lady just talking for so long and they don't show you what's going on around her, of Horace and Pete.
That's an idea.
I don't know.
But what we're also talking about is just like not necessarily needing a person to be funny, you know. Like, I mean, you could study.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen some Horace and Pete. I think it is still primarily like sitcom humor, just the strangest, darkest version of sitcom humor.
Yeah,
imaginable.
It's a deconstruction of basically. Like the Honeymooners, right?
But I don't, I think someone like Louis C.K., they're not studying Buster Keaton or Chaplin specifically, you know, that's one that, you know, I would argue if you wanted to learn a lot about how to do visual comedy, right, look at him, you know, even just look at the Looney Tunes, honestly.
Yeah.
Those things are entirely that. So I don't know, we've lost an...
Bogdanovich, look at Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, What's Up, Doc is...
Fantastic.
About the Looney Tunes, right? That's a live-action Looney Tunes.
Their filmmakers have lost the interest in referencing or at least like making things with the attitude of those films or have being that creatively minded that those films were.
Yeah, I do wonder now that I'm thinking about it, if it was sort of... Because Peter Bogdanovich is a movie critic first and has like a deep sort of respect and admiration for the Hollywood system and made a lot of movies that are traditional like sort of studio movies. He came around, of course, in the 70s and is thought of as like this great 70s auteur, but he's doing throwback stuff, right? Like he's not pushing the boundary. He's paying homage to what came before him. I do wonder if like the 70s happened and the auteur wave happens and everybody's like, oh, I'm going to make my dark war drama and I'm going to say something about like Vietnam and the ethos of our times. And, you know, we forget that the studio system was built on comedies. The studio system was built on musicals. The studio system was built on like just charming people doing charming things. And I do wonder if like that's sort of the genre that sort of got left behind. And now it's only being done by the, you know, by sketch comedy people or by like TV writers or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like it just feels flat to me. I don't know. There's a little bit more teeth to some of those 50s comedies that we really love, you know, even films that I'm not like huge on. I understand the love for something like His Girl Friday or I do like His Girl Friday. It was Bringing Up Baby that I was kind of on, but understandably like.
But my point is, though, like movies like that used to come out every week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
like that was the standard.
I would rather. But that's the thing. I'd rather have something like Bringing Up Baby every week than a Spy, you know.
Yes.
Much rather have something like that.
Right. Or some like Judd Apatow movie. And I like Judd Apatow. But again, like that's a stand-up comedian. That's. Yeah. I think, yeah, I get it. I still like Hairspray, right? Though.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention I like this movie.
I like this movie a lot. I think it's really good.
It's actually quite good.
Sure. All that to say the movie looked fairly unoriginal and very 2007, right? That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah,
it was good. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. I had a great time. Yeah.
We're not going to go over, I don't think, the plot beat for beat like last time because just listen to last episode. We just did it. We'll go over the differences, I suppose.
Okay.
I might argue this movie, compared to the first, is maybe a little more heavy-handed with its themes. I shouldn't say maybe because it definitely is, but I'm not sure it's a bad thing, actually. in this case.
Well, they're both heavy-handed, by the way, but this one special way.
It does it in its own way. I mean, it focuses more on certain things and less on other things, and focuses on certain things in a different way, even.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, for example, the fat is beautiful kind of ideal is actually more heavily focused on in this version. Mm-hmm. Partly just because there's more focus on the character of Edna than in the original.
Yes.
There's like a confidence in that first movie where it's like John Waters just doesn't really care to explain any of that stuff. He's just like, no, this is what I believe. Here it is on screen. Whereas like this movie is sort of developing it a little further, sometimes in a way that I actually don't mind. But in other ways can be a little heavy handed for sure.
Yeah. And this movie focuses on integration, probably about the same amount as the original, but in many different ways. I think it takes the topic a lot more seriously in a way, not to say that the original didn't take it seriously, but the original was kind of like lighthearted the whole way through. This movie, it gets really serious at times.
Yes.
But again, I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, there's a slight, like, maybe sanctimonious quality to it, but it definitely respects what the essence of, or the underlying themes of Hairspray. It's nowhere near as irreverent as that first Hairspray. I mean, not even close. Mm-hmm. So, like, the scene where they're marching is, like, actually a really well-done scene.
Probably better than in the original.
This is the other thing we're going to talk about. There's just flat out things that I think this movie does better occasionally, not the entire thing. I do think that first movie is a little better, but
I agree.
But they're also different. Dude, that's so funny. We all think that. Yeah.
But they're also different movies though. So I don't want to judge them too closely.
They are. Yeah. They're very different.
Yeah. Well, the intention here is not quite the same.
I think we can all agree. The original doesn't hold back at all, really.
No.
And this one is made to be a musical.
Well, that's a good point, right? Why do you think that this one is a little more heavy-handed with its social commentary? It's because the plot is being sung.
Yes,
right. So exactly.
I mean, that is just sort of the curse of musicals, and one of the reasons why I'm not a huge fan of them is
I mention this every single time. Is musical is tell, don't show, and it's out of necessity.
Sure.
And it's just how it is, you know.
Right. So in the first song, like, what's his name? Corny Collins is like saying, we have our Negro Day once a month or whatever. And that was actually one of my takeaways from the first movie, is that in the first hour or so, like, they sort of just let the racial politics sit there for you to find them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is incompetence on the part of John Waters or just sort of like his way of doing things, which is like, I am not really interested in like putting the camera somewhere and like telling the audience exactly how to feel about it. He's a little more like voyeuristic. And that's kind of what I appreciated about that first movie in comparison to the second one. It's like they don't do anything with the Zac Efron character in the first film at all.
No.
Like he's just a boyfriend that's there. And like he's immediately into Tracy because that's just like what turns him on, right? And he's just like kind of like a pervy teenager that's like getting into a romance with the main character, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Because John Waters is like, yeah, that's how like young romance works. Whereas in this movie, they make a point of making it like a plot point, a point of conflict and contention, right? It's like this sort of like star-crossed lovers, will they, won't they thing. And like, okay, sure, like it's more Hollywood, and I guess it serves the character better if you're going to do it that way. But I don't know, like I'm just kind of more into the movie that lets the characters be the characters, and I can just sort of get down to the vibes of like Dancing to the Courtney Collins Show or watching Divine like deliver some sort of like freestyle poetry dialogue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that stuff in there, like the Michelle Pfeiffer character. They make her the she is played by Debbie Harry in the original movie, but they make her the producer of the show here. So they sort of they
which I thought was a great choice. I like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So they situate this thing around this Hairspray pageant. I don't think the word Hairspray is like ever used in that original movie. Like the Hairspray pageant isn't a thing. But so they make this Hairspray pageant. They're like, okay, this is where the third act is going to sort of climax, and Michelle Pfeiffer is going to do all these bad things, and like she's more explicitly evil. Whereas in the first movie, it's just like, yeah, like she's just like a racist, you know, and like she's, I guess at the end of it, like she plants a bomb in her wig, but like she's more just like goofy racist.
It's John Waters.
Yeah, I mean, just like a John Waters ne'er-do-well sort of character, like a bad, icky character. Yeah. Whereas here, like it's a more like competently constructed sort of A-plot, B-plot.
Right.
Act one, act two, act three thing.
No, I mean, if we're like, it's more of a traditional film. That's just what it is.
Right. Right.
I mean, it, like we were talking about this when we did the first movies, that like there are instances where you don't fully understand Tracy's motivation aside from she just wants to dance. Mm. And why does she, you know, why is she so pro integration? Just because, you know, and that's it. And this movie does a lot of backing that up and showing you why she would be so interested at this point in time, because traditionally, you know, in the 60s, this is a very taboo thing. And then this movie naturally introduces you like, no, she just has an affection for this culture and this way of life. And it just, you know, comes to her when she's when she meets them in detention and you completely buy it.
She feels more like... More at home there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And yeah, absolutely. And
but they
I
put
actually,
more roadblocks in the way of her getting to the show too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. part of it, is that this this culture is sort of like a sort of like a release, like a safe haven. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the original movie, it's just like she shows up and she's a good dancer, and so they put her on the show,
and there's
and
no
like everybody loves her, and like she becomes a celebrity,
right?
And,
like in this one, she distinctly is not actually accepted onto the show. She has to like kind of circumvent her way onto it,
which is how you would expect set a movie like
right,
this,
because there's
out.
Conflict
right,
in this movie.
Right, right.
Yes, but much there better. Is something kind of charming about the idea that John Waters is creating a world that he wishes were true, as opposed to this one where it's like, we're going to show you the ills of our current moment.
And yeah, yeah.
The ease that the characters take in that movie is part of what makes it so much funnier, too. So that's like the inherent comedy of just a lot of this stuff just being kind of... I don't know if arbitrary is the word, but just like the simplicity to the way things unfold. Because you watch a movie like that, and when I was watching, I was sort of shocked by how little conflict there is for a lot of the movie. And I was like, how is she working her way up? How are this many people okay with what she's doing? How are, you know, how is the villain being constantly knocked down as frequently as she is and not getting back up? Like usually in a movie, yes, like you said, there's a lot of like back and forth, and you're not always sure if the hero is going to win.
In a weird way, though, in that first movie, doesn't it feel like they're more believable teenagers because of how sort of like apathetic and how just things like they feel more believable as teenagers?
It is. It's 100% more genuine. And that it like if you've ever been to high school, which it doesn't feel like anybody in Hollywood has ever actually been. Yeah. Things just sort of happen to you. Right. Like people just start dating, or like you just like, you know, there's just. Guys making out behind the friggin' lockers or whatever. And it's just like a thing that happens, and like not much is made of it. Like there's not like this whole fucking narrative of like you across the room and there's love at first sight, like the Amanda Bynes character with her boyfriend in this movie.
Like we have not like really delved into the cast. Like I don't want to take us off tangent here, but
I know we're just sort of like dropping these cherry bombs left and right. I'm like, what? Who's in this movie?
Frankly, the cast is great.
It's dynamite.
It's really it's good.
It's
really
it's
good.
Dynamite. But yeah, you're right, Nick. Like that is a thing that high school is not like this fucking Lord of the Flies narrative that a lot of Hollywood movies make it out to be. You know?
Which is why I think we can all say like, yeah, this other one is like technically better written. And like, I 100% agree with that sentiment. And like, yes, there's more conflict. And in many ways, the plot is more interesting. But I'm more attached to the characters in the original.
I agree.
Yeah. No. I'm going to be honest, guys. The character work in here is actually a lot stronger.
Okay.
I find... Well,
for some of the characters.
Yeah. I find the first movie a lot more... I mean, I find this movie plenty entertaining. Don't get me wrong. But I guess the reason I come on the side of that first movie is just because the total fuck you nature of it all. Just the John Waters voice is just so infectious for me personally. And it's so funny that I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just love the chaotic nature of all the characters in that movie. And I love as well that it doesn't give you time to fully understand who everybody is aside from like the superficial cliff note. This is who they are and this is why they're succeeding.
Right.
Whereas like this movie tells a story like, you know, I don't know. Part of the reason why they don't do a lot of high school stories is that, I don't know, high school's not very interesting.
No, but I think that's the point. That's what I'm saying.
But my question is, how intentional was John Waters in like making it just like, like, eh, it just happens.
I don't know if that was intentional.
Yeah.
It may have just been a byproduct of
Exactly.
That. But for me, but it feels authentic, right? Right. Yeah. For some reason, it feels more authentic in a way.
I feel really weird calling that first movie 100% authentic.
But authentic to the experience of a madman. You know what I'm saying? Here's the thing.
Like, in this movie, I feel like I know all of these characters and things are happening for reasons that make sense. And that's not real life. Like, I have tons of people that I don't know. I just know them in this one element and shit just happens randomly. And I just kind of like react to it. And that's kind of how the first movie feels. It feels like things are happening. Random people are there. People are reacting. And we're just like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it feels more like real life.
Yeah, if most movies were like that, I'd fucking hate movies.
I think there's a reason that movies aren't made that way.
I don't want to sound too hypocritical here, because generally we're like, no, the more character work, the better. And, you know, it even doesn't matter what the setting is in a high school movie, still, the more character work, the better storytelling. So,
no, I get it. I just think, like, apathy in movies is kind of cool.
It depends.
Like, I kind of like, you know, filmmakers, like the Safdie brothers do this a lot, right? Like, sometimes the camera is like just like sort of trailing off when like a main character gets shot in the head, you know? Like, there's not a lot of punctuation.
Drunk on the camera. They're just kind of like, hey, well, I'm going to look over here.
Steven Soderbergh is the perfect example of this. Like, he'll make movies where, you know, a big thing will be happening. Like, I think about The Nick, a show that he did for Cinemax.
Yeah.
And it's like this really bloody, like, hospital period piece drama, right? And there's, you know, all of these very violent operations and there's blood and guts all over the place. And his camera in that show will just, like, move into the corner of the room to just see what's going on outside. But I, like, really dig that. I kind of like when just events are there. It actually works great in horror. Like, yeah. I think about when Ari Aster does this in Hereditary. Mm-hmm. He puts the camera just in the guy's room and the fucking creepy lady's in the corner. And it's like, holy shit, when you find it, it's like,
yeah.
Sometimes you don't always need to have your hand held. And
no.
It's not cinematic, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think that type of story focused the same way our eyes do on just like random shit and just like flicking around and.
Oh my God, it'd be.
But to that point, though.
It'd
but
be
to,
nauseating.
To right, that point. Horrible. To yeah. that point, that is theater.
Mm-hmm.
That is sure. what the experience of seeing a Broadway play is.
Yeah.
Right?
It's you just, focus on random things at random times. That's why everybody has to be playing their part at all times on stage.
You're the director. You're watching it, and you're the, right. or at least you're the camera person. Like, you are you're focusing on whatever your sort of, wherever your interest sort of takes you. And it's like, there's no director there holding your hand being like, all right, now we're going to cut to the close up of the knife in the person's hand.
Granted, there are tricks with lighting and things like that.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah,
obviously,
I was just about to say that's
it's different. It's different.
That's half true. I mean, I don't know how many plays you've been to, but there is generally a focus point.
Of course. And you'll stay on that person. That come down and it's like, there's a way of staging it and blocking it where the person.
Like you watch it and it does kind of cut in your head. You'll jump to like this part of the corner and then you'll jump back to this person who's supposed to be the focus of the scene. Right, and then you'll go back to the background dancers again, much like it kind of does in a movie.
Certainly.
I mean, I understand it's a different medium. You have to adapt it properly, but yeah. I mean, if you were to do just a flat play and they never cut, then it wouldn't exactly be cinematic.
That wouldn't be a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Let's talk about the cast. You want to? Can we just run through the cast?
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I just say like the idea of like spotlights, like is specifically for that reason. Look at this person.
Point taken.
Yes,
I get it. Point taken. But the reason that some movies don't necessarily or theatrical productions that don't work as movie adaptations is because there is something stagey about it. Like the director is not like Cats. The reason why Cats fucking blows is not just because there's fucking cats that look like humans and they have no buttholes. It's that Tom Hooper doesn't know how to like stage a sequence properly. And so everything ends up looking like a really shitty theatrical production of Cats as opposed to a movie. Right.
It's a lot of reasons why that thing's.
A lot of reasons. The no buttholes is a big one.
Is that the big criticism?
It would be my main takeaway.
You have a cat.
Listen, if you've ever had a cat, you know that the butthole is just always there. It's just always there. It's always in your face. And the fact that the butthole cut was not released I think is not true to not only the source material, but to life. Nick, where were you going with the cast?
I think we got to talk about this cast.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
I think we need to. I mean, this cast is fucking wild.
The year, by the way, is 2007.
Great year for movies.
2007.
One of the best years for movies. One of the best of all time. It feels like this thing came out 4 years ago, and it's fucking shocking that it came out 14 years ago and that I had not seen it. Like, because I just assumed, oh, yeah, this came out when I was, like, not into this shit anymore.
Director of the great film The Pacifier, starring Vin Diesel.
Holy shit.
Mm.
I remember the advertising for that.
I do, too.
It would make sense now if the title read this way, but it doesn't necessarily make sense in 2002 that it read this way. Vin Diesel is The Pacifier. Which is the Jean-Claude Van Damme move, right? Or the Steven Seagal move.
Yeah. Really quick, too. Like, the amount of roles in this movie, the amount of characters there are, all of the types of people that they needed casting, and they bring John Waters in as a flasher in the first 5 minutes, and then they just, that's it. I love it.
Like, brilliant. There is not a single Hitchcock cameo that even comes close to this John Waters cameo.
Fucking Stan Lee has nothing.
Nothing.
This is
incredible. Seriously, it is like the perfect cameo. I was like, brilliant. I was like clapping. It was so great.
She's walking and singing about how much she loves Baltimore at the beginning, and she goes, oh, there's the flasher who lives down the street, and he waves her like, hi, and then he just shows his dick to some ladies. It's great.
I love
it's
it.
It's so John Waters. Much. It's perfect.
Go John Waters.
So good.
But yeah, this cast is absolutely bonkers. I'm not sure I can actually name all of these people, but I will start with Tracy. The lead actress is actually played by the same actress who played her on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
Incorrect.
Right?
Oh, well,
not
sure?
The initial run. Maybe she did at some point, but
I'm pretty sure I was reading that she was the one on Broadway.
Marissa Jarrett Vinicor.
Well, I'm gonna have to fact check that now.
Initial one. I know that because Melissa Jarrett Vinicor. I think it's Vinicor. Vinator? I don't know. Sounds like a dinosaur. She won the first edition of Celebrity Big Brother.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
And just to give you an idea of how much they're stretching.
You are right, and somehow I am completely wrong. I could have sworn I fucking read that somewhere, but...
Yeah.
Can I just say, by the way, on the comment of this cast being bonkers, which it is, but it's amazing how well cast it is.
It's great.
With one notable exception.
Okay.
Yes. Very notable.
Aw, come on, guys.
Horrible.
No.
Horrible.
All right, let me name this here.
Okay,
you're right. You're right. I was wrong. I don't know how I got that wrong. I swear to God, I fact-checked that.
Melissa Jarrett Vinicor?
Yeah. The person who played Tracy had not done this at all. I don't know why I thought she did.
See, I was actually looking at the cast for the musical, and I'm like, oh, the... One role could have been improved a lot had they just stuck with it. Jerry Stiller returns as Mr. Pinky.
Mm.
Small part.
The dress seller for the plus-sized women.
Yep. Allison Janney plays Prudy Pingleton, the mother of Tracy's best friend.
What's she in? What else is she?
Allison Janney? Ooh.
She was an Oscar winner for I, Tonya. She was in the aforementioned Help.
Mm-hmm.
She was she played CJ on The West Wing.
She's just been in the peripheral for me forever.
She's in the sitcom Mom on CBS.
Yeah.
She's one of those ladies.
Oh, nothing for her. Me. Yeah. Nothing for me. Okay.
Nothing for you. All right.
That's fine.
She was in Spy.
Was she?
Spy.
Oh,
didn't see it, but
I mean, fucking West Wing, man.
All
do
right.
Yourself
well.
A favor. Do yourself a favor. Zac Efron, hot off of High School Musical Part 1.
Great role for him.
Really just like flexing the clout on the High School Musical clout. You know what I'm saying?
I want to talk about him and his character in this movie a lot more later.
Right. But this is the character that I think is most expanded on from the previous film.
To comment that off mic, guys, I'm playing with a pen and I've been playing with the end here and I'm a little disturbed because it definitely seems like it's been chewed on by Nico or something.
It has, and you're probably just like absorbing your saliva into your pores right now.
You know, you saw that I was holding this pen.
We call it the COVID pen.
It's the this is what gave him COVID.
Well, this very gave it COVID.
Oh God.
I would put it down. I mean, listen, if you're at, are you asking if you should put it down? Yes, you should put it down.
Probably. I'm in some weird trance where I'm trying to flex my fingers, but I can't open them.
I am paralyzed. I can't move.
It's like a snake in front of me. If I move, I'm dead. That's what this is right now.
Yeah, I'd put it down. I'd put it down and I would disinfect that hand. I might cut that hand off, actually.
Maybe get some LASIK. I don't
Dude,
know.
Get, get some LASIK for my hand.
Dude, I fucking gnash on that thing all day, dude.
Fuck.
I nibble. That's my pen, dude.
Shit.
Jesus Christ.
How far am I into this notebook? What is it, halfway? I've been gnashing on that pen exactly that many days.
You piece of shit.
Look at that, man.
God damn. This aside did not go in my favor. I don't like this.
Efron, high school, I mean, like, Vanessa Hudgens ain't doing Hairspray in 2007. Good on Zac Efron. The rest of the cast I heard was on the live tour, the High School Musical live tour, and he had to drop out of the live tour to do this movie. I think he made the right choice.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really good.
Efron. One of those Disney actors that just, like, continually made the right choice. Moving on.
But what's the problem, guys?
What's Efron got coming down the pipe?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, what was he just cast in? Jesus Christ.
He's doing a remake of Three Men and a Baby.
Okay.
Of course, was just in The Beach Bum. The Greatest Showman. Baywatch.
He played Ted Bundy in a movie.
Ted Bundy in that movie with the worst name of all time.
Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of good stuff.
Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. Very bad movie.
You saw that movie?
I saw it with your girlfriend.
What? How do I not know this? I don't like how many secret movies you've seen with Abby. You've seen a lot of movies with Abby, okay? This is always a surprise to me, listeners. I'll be like, you've seen that movie? And invariably, the response is, I saw that with your girlfriend. Oh,
Adam, avid movie watcher, was not invited to watch a movie with his girlfriend.
The movie was watching us, Adam.
But, like, this has happened, like, three times. Oh, you've seen Hardcore Henry? I saw it with your girlfriend, Adam.
Yeah, that wasn't the only hardcore thing going on in that movie.
Jesus Christ.
No, I think there were other people.
Okay.
I don't know. You have to ask Abby about it. I don't really recall the details. It's all a blur.
Well, it's because he didn't have LASIK yet. That's why it was a blur.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah. I don't know, Nika. She really liked those glasses. She's going to miss your glasses.
I think your girlfriend was there. I don't know. Maybe she wasn't.
Maybe it was someone else's girlfriend. I gotta think about
it. Someone else's. Else is it. Nico's always hanging out with someone else's girlfriend.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
Go fuck yourself. You can all go straight to hell.
Who else we got? We said Michelle Pfeiffer.
It's so true. Oh. It's so true.
We mentioned Michelle Pfeiffer's in this film.
Oh, no. It's like you said it, and then I'm thinking, oh, this person. Oh, this person. Oh, that person.
It went from, like, insult to Adam and pro to Nico to insult to Nico, like, that quick.
Oh, I love it. Bravo. Bravo, Nico.
This pod got way too fucking real, way too fucking fast. The facade just got broke. Jesus. Dude, we were just making so many fat dick jokes. All of a sudden, I'm in therapy. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, that's funny. That's funny shit. Oh, boy.
We're really burying the lead here.
No, we're not done. Hold on, there's more. James Marsden is Corny Collins.
Incredible. Good. Perfect casting.
I loved him in this.
Perfect casting.
We're delaying the inevitable, guys.
Hang on. Amanda Bynes is Penny Pingleton.
I liked it, but weird.
Yes, I liked her too.
Sucking on a lollipop constantly. Something I pictured a lot as a young child.
I feel like that was more for us, the audience, than for the film's sake, but I will accept it.
Oh boy, have you all seen a picture of Amanda Bynes lately?
No.
I hesitate to even show you, but
it's bad.
Go ahead.
It's bad.
Do a little Google search. Amanda Bynes been through it. This was before, I think, the drug problems and DUI and everything. Yeah. But
and the schizophrenia.
And by I think bipolar.
Oh, so,
yeah. Whatever.
But, you know, and the above. I got to say, in this movie, she plays Penny, like we said, Penny Pinkleton. And when her mother traps her inside of her house and they have this like practically jail cell like basement room. I honestly think that might be where Amanda Bynes was actually raised in between filming of The Amanda Show.
Oh my God.
Okay, evidently Amanda Bynes
pretty
didn't
horrible.
Have that. Okay, Amanda Bynes made these accusations in like 2014 on Twitter that her dad raped her as a child, and it turned out that wasn't true. She was just like saying it because somebody put a microchip in her brain. But she also said that her dad put a microchip in her brain. But she was also on like a lot of drugs. Really just like an
wasn't it wasn't it actually
figure.
The Nickelodeon guy, what's his
Ooh.
Name?
Yes,
who made Fairly
Dan
Odd Parents?
Schneider.
Dan Schneider.
Yeah, there's
what wasn't ones. There some alleged abuse there? I don't know the details, but like
I'm not sure if it was with Amanda Bynes, but there was definitely
she was involved.
Oh, look at this poor girl.
For sure. Any child star, and especially the females, it's...
Oh, look at that. Is Amanda Bynes now exposing Dan Schneider? Look at that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a thing. It's a recent thing that I've... So
there was an article, I think it was in the New York Post, that was like, Amanda Bynes is doing well on her 35th birthday. And it's just like a picture that makes it look like she's in a crack den.
Like she looks like a used dish towel.
Like it was really like, I don't want to be mean. Like obviously,
but you know,
what,
Adam, that's
really
not
bad
a bad metaphor for like how the entertainment industry treats these young females. Like it is terrible.
Yeah. I just think I could not believe the irony. It was so like New York Post being like, we're going to show the most wretched picture of this person
God,
and say she's doing great on her 35th birthday.
For real.
Nose ring and I believe a face tattoo.
A heart shaped
face tattoo on her cheek.
I think about, you know, we were talking about like Zac Efron and like Vanessa Hudgens. That's a great example right there. Or the cast of Twilight. I'm forgetting his name right now, but.
Lautner Pattinson who?
Pattinson. Yeah. Think about Pattinson. He's doing so well. And like everyone else for that movie, it's just, you know,
it goes one of two ways.
It does go one of two ways. But a lot of times I think it does tend to lean in favor of the men. You can look at Justin Bieber and like young female singers from, you know, that era as well. And, you know,
right.
I mean, it's a lot easier to bounce back as a guy. That's for sure.
Shia LaBeouf has bounced back pretty.
Shia LaBeouf,
in a pretty interesting
great example.
Way, so.
Yeah, you know, right. it's not great for these young females. I will say,
because you don't have some creepy old men at fucking Nickelodeon like casting the hottest 12-year-old on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's clearly what it was. Like they only pick like the prettiest girls for like perverts like us at 12 years old watching Zoe 101. You know, like
I wasn't a pervert.
Not like now, at least.
Not
right,
like
Adam?
Now. Oh, God, no. But yeah, like, no, that's definitely what they were doing, though. They were, like, definitely making these girls, like, sexual objects.
Absolutely.
Like, I saw...
That's horrible.
Drake Bell obviously got in trouble for, like, what was he, like, sexting, like, an underage girl or something? He got prison time or probation or something.
He did?
Right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Drake Bell's, like, in some serious trouble for doing that. And I do wonder, like, obviously a monstrous thing to do, whatever, but, like, I do wonder if that's just the mentality of some of these kids... is that they're growing up as sexual objects all the time. And so because they were sexualized as a kid, they're like, oh, why can't I just like carry on a relationship with a 16-year-old? Like
there's
I was,
whole, there's a whole field
age.
Of psychology related to that. And it's
right.
It's
like
a thing.
That's yeah. It's I mean, thing. That's definitely a thing. Like that's just the mindset when you get into it.
Right. It's horrible. You know? So,
and then they just create just new monsters and it just, yeah. Anyway.
Amanda Bynes,
but she's good in the movie.
Yeah.
I like
oh
it.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer. As Velma Von Tussle.
I would argue the best casting of the movie.
I would argue the
Incredible.
Best performance in the movie.
And, yep, best performance.
Yeah. Fife Dog. Love me some Fife Dog.
Me too. Best Catwoman.
That white gold.
Not even close.
Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold.
Not even close. God, I love me some Fife Dog.
That's a song lyric,
it.
By the way.
Get
I'm not
to
racist.
It.
Christopher Walken as Wilbur Turnblad. Christopher Walken. I'm walking.
Strangest
here.
Choice?
Yes.
I liked it. But
well, not as strange as the big one, but yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The second strangest choice.
Yeah.
I think fine in the movie.
Sure.
Weird. I don't know what he, I don't know if he's good or bad. He's just weird.
He's
decide
him.
For your,
he's
decide
him.
For yourselves.
He's
people,
never
when
any
you see
different
the movie.
Than him. They knew what they were getting. They chose him for a reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sure. Queen Latifah as Motormouth Mabel.
Great.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Second build in the movie. I
really?
Think like another one of the expanded roles from the
Work
first
the money.
Movie. and top build. Yep. Top build in the film.
I guess that makes sense.
2007. Just to remind y'all.
Edna Turnblad, played by the, by the way, divine player in the previous movie. Mm-hmm. Edna Turnblad, played by Jonathan Travolta.
Not John Travolta, Jonathan Travolta. Different Travolta.
Yeah.
Sure felt like a different Travolta. at least in 2007, especially. But
did you know there was a fourth Jonas Brother, by the way? I just learned this today.
A fourth brother, not a Jonas Brother. I mean, a brother of the Jonases, but...
Correct.
He wasn't a Jonas Brother.
Fourth Jonas Brother. Well, they call him Bonus Jonas.
Wow. Yeah,
the Jonas Great Brothers nickname. Have another brother I that, love that wasn't That's good a, enough to get in
You
the
know
bands.
What? I want to be the fourth Jonas Brother just for that nickname.
It's a great nickname.
That's a great nickname.
It's a great nickname.
I'm pretty sure he hates it, too.
Oh, fuck him.
He's probably addicted to Adderall.
That's a very specific accusation.
No, you know, like, he's probably like really fucking miserable.
He's in rehab now. Yeah.
Okay. Edna Turnblad, John Travolta. I think a horrendous performance.
This is pre-Battlefield really Earth.
No, correct? Absolutely not. No, post. Very post. Six was years that, later.
Is this post?
Okay. don't start there. It's not Battlefield Earth.
What year did this come? What year did this
many years after. Battlefield Earth came out like 98, 99, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, it did.
I'll say a couple things. It's a very entertaining performance.
It's a horrible performance out of it. It's terrible.
I got a few laughs out of it. It's fucking ridiculous. I mean, it's the best John Travolta's looked since Grease, so I'll give him that.
Looked?
Yes. Looked. In quotes.
You know, I couldn't help but think, like, this is probably the last musical he's done since Grease.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever, I guess. Yeah,
maybe. Cool.
Yeah.
Is it a good performance? No. Did I enjoy it?
Horrendous.
Yes. Yes.
Adam, it was so fucking distracting.
Yes, it is.
I could not. It was more distracting than Divine by far.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Not even close. Divine is Divine. It's a whole different person.
I sat there like kind of thinking through the pros and cons of casting not even Travolta, but a man in this role. And like, I think it was kind of the right thing to do.
In spirit, it makes the most sense.
Well, that's what they did on the stage version.
Yeah, that's what they did in Broadway.
Harvey Fierstein,
right? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Which I think you got to bring him in for this.
Should have been
that's
the choice,
what
right?
I was saying. Yeah. It's like, why is obviously just because
they wanted the Travolta. Wow. Bill, though, you know, they wanted that.
They finally wanted to, you know, listen, some universes are just on a collision path, and they wanted to finally bridge the gap between Grease 1 and Grease 2. And so Travolta and Pfeiffer had to make a movie together.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
I love that conspiracy. Yeah.
I think so.
That's great.
Maybe. If they put just like a female in the role, it would have just completely made that character feel unimportant. And it would have kind of just been like insulting.
I think insulting's really the thing.
You could argue they could have made a transgendered person play that role, but...
Yeah, but...
I think the guy's got to be gay.
Yeah.
Which, I think you can argue that Travolta is gay.
Well,
many have.
There are some masseuses many that have argued that, yes.
There have been many arguments in that in that direction. You know,
I was in
maybe,
there with
it.
I was
maybe Travolta's a great choice.
I was maybe in there with him for 3 hours. Nothing.
No, I think you have to. I think an openly gay guy. I think you have to cast here. And I don't know why not Harvey Fierstein. It's a layup.
Well, the problem is like you can't like recapture Divine, but I hear Harvey Fierstein. That's not a bad idea.
No, at least that's like his own thing. Yes. Like he's his own like sort of like feminine gay icon. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he's had years to play it on the stage. Like, you know, he knows the role. There's really no excuse other than you want Travolta on the fucking poster.
Yeah.
Right?
Who did him in the 2000? Didn't they do a 2016? Live? Didn't NBC do a live production of it?
I don't know.
Let me look that up.
Of Hairspray?
I don't know.
Yeah. Who? Let's see.
I know it's still touring. I mean, it's coming to Cincinnati.
I wonder who played.
I might have mentioned last week.
Hairspray Live 2016. Oh.
Oh God, who was it?
Harvey Fierstein.
Oh no!
Yes, they brought him on for this one.
Oh man!
Come on! as they should have. Jennifer Hudson played Motormouth Mabel. Ariana Grande is Penny Pingleton.
I guess. I mean,
yeah,
I see
it. I don't know who played the lead.
Oh, man.
Martin Short as Wilbur Turnblad.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's entirely some stupid studio decision, isn't it? Jeez, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it just seems like a layup to me. I don't know. I think it's really bad. I don't know what the accent is that he's doing. He's
all
doing like
of the
some
commercials.
Like,
well, it's a, being it's a, Travolta for this movie. There was it didn't focus on anything else.
Correct.
Like, it's an attempt at a Baltimore accent, by the way. But
yeah, which is
my urn.
I'm yeah, but it, my urn. Isn't that more Philly than Baltimore?
I don't know.
Who knows? I don't think it's any.
Like, Kate Winslet just did that in Mayor of Easttown, but, like, she was a lot more subtle about it, because Kate Winslet can, like, act. You know?
Kate Winslet.
You know, she likes his water. You gotta go get the water in the, you know...
That's like Long Island.
Was it reasonable?
That's not that.
I know. I just see what Kate sprung to mind.
Yeah. So you guys weren't even entertained by this performance.
No, I was entertained. It's just, like, it's taking me out of the movie every time.
It was so distracting that I think when Christopher Walken and John Travolta were having their dance scene... Walken's laughs were not in the script. Those were... he just couldn't help himself because it was so fucking silly.
And also have some courage, you bastards, and just kiss on screen, will you?
I know. I thought the same
fucking
thing.
Fucking out.
I was like,
just do it.
There's a point where he goes in for it and then pushes away.
And you know,
like,
Travolta's the one who said, we're not kissing. Travolta's like, I'll dress as a woman, but I ain't kissing a man on screen.
I don't know about that one.
I think Walken was laying down the law on that.
I don't know. I think Walken wouldn't be as afraid to do that.
Walken
for his image.
Ain't doing that shit.
He might.
Walken ain't doing.
He
that.
Might.
Come on, man.
I don't know.
Christopher Walken.
Have you seen Nine Lives? Oh wait, you have.
I have. I have indeed. No, Walken ain't. Walken ain't.
Nine Lives. What a fucking movie.
One of the worst movies I've ever seen, and I mean that honestly. It's not an exaggeration at all. No. Okay, but there you go. Put Firestein on that in that role, and put
I mean, Walken, like, you could have replaced him, too, and it would have been, like,
I didn't
fine,
think that was perfect either, but it was.
And let Jerry Stiller play the role again.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, that would have worked. That
and Jerry
fine.
Stiller would have been down for that joke. Yeah.
Ben Stiller.
No, not Ben
That's
Stiller.
That's too
but
cheeky.
Let Jerry do it again. Why not? Run it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe Walken's a little younger, but still, I mean, Stiller could still carry a tune. Yeah, no, it's a bad performance. I don't know what the accent is. He's doing a weird, like, John Travolta female voice, and it's not convincing at all. He's doing shtick.
Yeah.
He's doing shtick, and it really is distracting, and I know, like, everybody thinks it's so funny, because it's like, oh, John Travolta in drag. This is the John Travolta in drag movie, but it's, I don't know. Listen, you're either a Travolta guy or you're a Cage guy, and we're Cage guys here.
That's right. that's our team.
We're Team Cage, and
it's really sad to think about Team Travolta. It's just really sad.
There are Travolta performances I like. I would say there's plenty of
them. There are iconic ones.
Are there any before Battlefield Earth or after Battlefield Earth?
After? He's good in Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, I guess. He's not bad.
Okay,
he's
yeah,
not bad
right.
in that. So
he's definitely like a 90s actor, though.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like,
well, he's a 70s and a 90s actor.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
He's like tremendous in Blowout, the Brian De Palma film. So
it's a movie I just watched for the first time recently. Tremendous movie. Yeah, no, I mean, he's got great 70s movies, and then he goes away, and then he comes back for, like, okay, the Travolta comeback, I think, is one of the more overstated parts of film history.
Yeah, it's true.
Because everybody talks about Pulp Fiction and everything. It's like, all right, whatever. But he does Face Off in that run. You know what I'm saying? Like, he does A Civil Action. He does Primary Colors. He does, like, Look Who's Talking To was in 1990. So this idea that, like, you know, Travolta comes back and it's like he's one of Hollywood's premier actors again. It's like, no. But what year did Battlefield Earth come out? 2000?
2000. Yeah.
So even if it was a comeback, it was a very short-lived one. And then once again, he's back doing Wild Hogs.
Right. Yes, that. Oh, boy, Wild Hogs.
Yeah. I just think it's an overstated part of film history.
Well, because it's really Pulp Fiction, and it's not really much
it's
else.
It's really just Pulp Fiction, isn't it?
And it's
it?
Also not really him. Like, he's fine, but, like, it's a Tarantino movie. It's not...
It's,
You can't give him all the credit. You can't give him all the credit.
The actors, yeah.
I think you give him actually very little of the credit. I think like the magic trick of that movie is the casting. Like that's the reason why the performance works so well, is because it's a great work of casting. It's like, I'm going to like reach back into history, as Tarantino is, you know, does with so many actors, with Bruce Dern or fucking Kurt Russell or whoever. And it's like, I'm going to remind people why they loved this guy in the first place, even if they weren't alive when Grease came out, you know,
yeah.
Like, or when Saturday Night Fever came out. Like, I'm going to remind people why John Travolta was a movie star, and that he stopped working with Tarantino and then it was over. Right. Like the key to any great comeback is working with the right director that knows how to utilize you, and
whatever.
Not the case here.
I don't really care about Travolta anymore. So
I don't either.
No,
I'm so fucking indifferent to that guy now.
There's a lot of sad actors. Like, he's one of them. Will Smith's another. I don't really care.
I'm worse than indifferent to him. I'm like actively disgusted.
Travolta?
Yes. Actively disgusted is probably the word
I would use. Moose is in the house.
Fucking Christ.
Fucking Gotti, dude.
Oh, Gotti.
He's just horrible in everything now.
Dude, the Fanatic?
Yep.
Come on.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So.
So there. That's the cast, right?
Yeah.
That's the cast. And the movie is the movie. The same movie as the last time, but there's more songs in it. And they eliminate the domestic terrorism.
I got to put this out there. The music, I think, was worse. And I know you might be like, well, this one's a musical, the other one wasn't, so what are you even saying? The 50s music in particular that they were showing on the TV show was actively, like, there's a difference between a 1980s depiction of 50s and 60s music versus a 2000s depiction of 50s and 60s music. And the 1980s version is superior.
Because they have a closer relationship to it.
Yeah, I think so. It's slower. It's, I mean, the one in this movie was like made for a modern audience, so they made it faster and more. It just wasn't actually representative.
Oh yeah,
right. It was almost like rap, and it's like that's not what it was.
I also thought it was like the musical. I mean, I enjoyed the musical numbers, but I did think that they were very long.
I think the songs are good.
Yeah, I mean, the songs too.
The musical numbers that were for the musical. Were fine. I mean, they were
good
as any other musical, which, I'm going to be honest, musicals, the lyrics are awful. Like, I think that is just like a cornerstone of musicals. The lyrics are bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's true, because they just tell you what they're thinking.
Right.
Just, you know.
I think, you know, one of the other problems is that the Corny Collins show, I'm not really sure what the Corny Collins show is in this. Like, and that's part of the problem, too, is because John Waters has a deep affection for, like, American Bandstand and whatever the show was that aired locally in Baltimore, right? Like, it was very much, it felt like it actually existed in a cultural moment, whereas this is kind of, it's a dance show, and it's, like, a show where just, like, people do musical numbers, and I know, like, it's a musical depiction of it or whatever, but, like, it, to me, that's not, like, a show that would actually exist.
This is a musical.
I know. I get it.
I don't know. I had the same sentiments towards the Corny Collins show in the first movie, where it's like, it's just a show where people sing and dance. Is that it?
Yeah, but that was a thing.
They were doing the mashed potato.
Yeah, well, I mean,
they were doing the mashed potato, and in this one, they were like rapping almost.
No, I understand that, but I still get the point across that it is a show where people just sing and dance and do nothing else. Like,
I think there's a slight, almost hard to define air of authenticity in the original that this could not match. And again, it's a musical, so this is not supposed to be based in reality. And I get it.
I know.
We're not, Adam, we're not necessarily saying like this movie did something bad by doing that. We're saying this movie's different in this way, and it had an experience for the viewer, which was less good. That's what I'm trying to say. I think that's fair, right?
Because musicals suck.
Yeah, right. Especially musicals.
By the way,
this is
fucking September 11. I forgot to say the name. Oh, yeah, it is. And we're doing musicals all month. I forgot. I forgot the stinger. How could I forget, dude?
Oh. Yeah,
musicals blow. I don't like them. It's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's like watching Tarantino recreate a television Western in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, that's actually a Western that would have aired on NBC at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Whereas, you know, you see most modern day sort of attempts at a classic Western, and there's always a little bit of a 2000s-ness to it.
I guess. I guess.
I just felt like John Waters was definitely paying homage to something that he enjoyed watching, and I think comes across more.
It definitely felt more believably that.
Well, because it was a guy that was alive in the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Whereas this is being made by people that are adapting what they think. But I think
Was he?
I don't know.
Not very.
But you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Nick, in that the further you get away from this stuff, what we think of as 50s or 60s or even now 80s is... Yeah, you know, it's not like in the 80s people were fucking sitting around playing Pac-Man all day. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just or just like listening
to
Thriller.
When you watch Stranger Things, there is a romanticization of the 80s.
Yeah. No, but 80s is almost a genre now where it's like we are depicting the stuff that is in 80s movies. And the further you get away from it, it's like this telephone game that you're playing. It's just new iterations on the same sort of paraphernalia or whatever. And you sort of lose sight of the fact that, oh yeah, we weren't just like wearing neon clothes and just like with mullets all day. Like, there was more to it. And I feel like that original Hairspray at least captured what it was actually like, as opposed to this one, which is
maybe.
Which is just like milkshakes and jukeboxes and whatever.
Yeah, fine. That, you know, this is the shtick of it all, isn't it? It's the same way that Grease is its own certain shtick for that.
It's
time.
A musical. I get it.
It's like the comparisons are. You're not being totally fair here. You know, there's been.
I'm not trying to be fair. I'm just telling you.
I like this movie. Yeah, I really like. Let me be clear. I really like this movie.
Yeah. No. I'm just saying. If we're talking about like what feels more authentic, it's hard for me to come down on this one too much because like it's an impression of that time period. It's not meant to be a document at all.
I mean, seeing a painting, a portrait of a person versus like some Van Gogh. Like, one of them looks more fucking authentic. I mean, that's not a dig at Van Gogh. I'm not saying Van Gogh's bad. I'm just saying I know what this is. That is a bunch of shapes and I can't identify it. You know, that's fine. You know, I hang up both of them in my house. Whatever fits better. I don't care. You know,
wow.
I get it. Yeah, that one's too big. Whatever.
I love me a Van Gogh painting, by the way.
I think if given the choice between hanging just some fucking portrait and hanging up a Van Gogh, I think the choice is clear on that. Okay. Did you have more notes? I imagine
I have a couple more.
Go ahead. Hit me.
So the main, to me, one of the main differences is the ending. They add scenes and take away scenes and whatever. There are certainly some differences, but the one that I really liked the best was the change in ending where Tracy, and this was not in the play, this was just for the movie, Tracy Turnblad does not become the winner of the Hairspray Festival. In a moment of selflessness, I suppose, Zac Efron's character pulls with Motorhead. What's her name?
Motorhead Mabel.
Mabel's daughter.
Is that her daughter? Oh,
Inez.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Her daughter, Inez. He's obviously a white person. She's a black person. And he pulls her onto the stage during live performance and dances with her, which is like completely like taboo. Mm-hmm. And
Allison Janney is freaking out, like praying the rosary and the
right. And Inez, this little girl, a little black girl, she wins. And I thought that was really cute and nice and really worked for them. It actually tied all of the themes together much nicer than the original ending. So
I think it's a better ending. Yes.
Right. Better ending.
Yes. I think more thematically appropriate
for. And it's shocking that it was not in the original and was not in the musical. On stage at all.
I feel like I'm a contrarian here. I do prefer this ending, but like that ending in the first movie is maybe not as suitable for the themes, but obviously more suitable for John Waters.
Sure.
In my opinion. So
in a way, I'm just surprised that like the musical didn't end up with this. Like, I'm surprised they just thought of it in the fucking John Travolta version.
Yeah.
Somehow they stumbled upon the best ending.
A lot of the racial stuff in these movies is like really messy. Like
it's a difficult subject. Like, how do you, especially in a musical, how do you properly deal with this? You know?
Yeah. Like, and also just like to watch fucking John Travolta, like leading like a freedom march in drag. Yeah. It's like there's just,
well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, there's a sort of, I don't know what the word, there's a flippantness to some of like the racial stuff. So I think like that ending, I think is a more fitting ending if you want to address those themes for sure.
Yeah.
I think this movie overall does a better job of addressing those themes too.
There is some stuff in there though. Like Amanda Bynes like starts dating a black guy and she's like, I've tasted chocolate and I'm never going back.
Yeah, there's it's
like that's a lyric in one of the songs.
Yeah. There is definitely a lot of the lyrics in the musical are kind of like, I don't know if I would have wrote that. But you know, I don't know. I'm not a musical writer. What do I know?
And there's like some like fat jokes in this too. Even I feel like more like in the original movie, they just call Tracy a fatso and that's it. But in
Christopher
this
Walken calls, he says fat and old.
I love you anyway, basically.
No, but there's a joke where Zac Efron finds a half-eaten Butterfinger underneath Tracy's pillow. And it's like there's a lot of like there's a scene where Mabel is able to seduce Edna by like just showing her a buffet of cakes.
No, it's like Southern like barbecue.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's okay. All right. So but there's a lot of like food jokes.
Yeah. But you know what though? And this kind of gets into the last thing I wanted to say about Zac Efron's character too, is this movie in a lot of ways kind of acknowledges a lot of the aspects of our culture that were originally black, African-American, that white people have kind of like taken, like rock and roll. Like Zac Efron's character is literally the Elvis archetype. And yet when he is in the detention with all of the black kids who are dancing and he does his dance that everybody loves, they're like, what are you doing? You look stupid. You know what I mean? And it's kind of the same thing with that food. Like Edna loves food, but like she loves like black people food, even though, you know, she might be a little uncomfortable around black people. It's like that's kind of one of those. There's a lot of acknowledging of that, which I like. I think they do really well. I don't know. I kind of like Zac Efron's character better in this as well because of that.
Mm-hmm. It's a better character.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just flat out a better character by all accounts. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
also the protest scene, Tracy has a big sign and she bonks a cop on the head with it. Mm. Just that little bonk. And then they cut to the news later. It's like,
oh,
Tracy bludgeoned an officer and a Korean War veteran with a crowbar, shattering his jaw. It's like, what?
That was one of the funnier moments.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, I loved it.
I do kind of find it funny that she like incites a race riot, though, and then runs away.
Yeah, I thought that.
She just ran. As soon as they're like, Tracy, she's like, I'm out.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
You arrest them, not me. I'm going to run for the
wall.
But
the way she's running away, too, she's got her hands up in the air and they're flailing. I got to get out of here.
It's a metaphor for something. I'll tell you that right now.
They also, when they go off with all of the black kids from detention to go to like that, they put all the white kids in the back of the bus. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes, they did.
I thought that was pretty silly.
Yeah, that's really good. I do love the running gag about Michelle Pfeiffer like sleeping with the judges in order win the Miss Hairspray contest years ago.
Her whole thing is she's like, she acts like she's superior while also acknowledging that she cheats to win. And it's like, she can't reconcile that.
Yeah, there's a very great, great line where Tracy is, you know, a vigilante from the law and they suspect that she's going to return to the set of the show, the Corny Collins show, in order to win this pageant. And they say, like, she wouldn't risk jail to just win a friggin' beauty pageant. And Fife goes, if I risk communicable diseases, she'll risk jail. It's a great line.
Yeah.
So good. Ricky Lake shows up as a William Morris talent agent.
Yep.
In the crowd. That was a nice little cameo. And I think that's all I had. The prank shop sequence, of course, with Pfeiffer and Walken. It kind of a reprise of the seduction scene in Batman Returns. Really good to see those two lovebirds back out.
Oh, God, that's right. That's right. Oh, I didn't even make the connection that they were in Batman Returns together.
That's so fucking good.
Come on, that's the first thing I thought of. It's like, oh, yes.
Back to this.
The best Batman movie.
I agree.
I fucking love that movie.
Oh, you agree, Nick? I don't think you do.
Do you agree?
I used to watch the movie as a kid all the time.
That's a fucking great movie.
Also, I watched Grease a lot as a kid, now that we mentioned that earlier. That was one of those constant on TV.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've seen Grease like 100 times. Not joking.
I love Grease. Unabashedly love that movie.
It's so good.
Grease is okay.
It's so good, Adam.
It's okay.
Okay, that's all I got. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, good movie.
Yeah, good movie as well. Yeah.
Let's play a game. How many Which way do you want to go?
Yeah, where do we go with this?
I don't know which one of these
Amanda Bynes
people we've done before.
You want to do Amanda Let's Bynes? Not do Amanda. No, that's mean. That's very mean.
I don't know, though, because we've done Travolta.
We have.
For sure.
We must have done Walken.
We must have done Walken.
Pfeiffer? Maybe.
Pfeiffer?
No, you did Pfeiffer. Didn't you do Pfeiffer for Stiller? Grease 2? Who else would you have done?
We probably did Pfeiffer for Grease 2, yeah.
I can check the notes.
Let's go Queen Latifah. We definitely didn't do Queen Latifah.
What about Zach?
We could do Zach.
But I feel like Zach has potential.
Oh, for you mean a later one?
Yeah.
Well.
I'm going, I don't know. My vote would be Latifah here.
But you want to try Latifah?
No. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Okay.
God, we might have started this game after Grease 2.
Really?
We might have.
Hmm.
All right. Latifah?
Let's do it.
Yeah, sure.
Multi-hyphenate, Queen Latifah, First Lady of Hip Hop.
Drew Carey's worth $180 million, we're saying.
She might have an EGOT. No, I don't think she has an EGOT.
No, I don't think she has, no.
She might have a couple, though. Star of The Equalizer on CBS.
Oh, she was in The Equalizer?
She is, yeah. She's the star of The Equalizer reboot.
Oh.
Yeah.
They what?
Yeah, they rebooted The Equalizer.
After the movies with Denzel Washington?
Well, there was a television series that was the first iteration of it. Way back in the day.
Okay.
And then Denzel did it in the movie, and yeah.
All right.
And now Queen Latifah is doing it on a show that has lasted, let's see, 2 seasons. Wow. They haven't canceled it yet.
Jeez.
Yeah, okay. Queen Latifah, what's your guess?
$100 million.
Ooh. $100 million.
$105.
Oh. Oh, you whore.
95.
Ah. What the fuck? Oh, I better have gotten this one exactly right. God, I hope I did. This will be funny.
My brother adores Queen Latifah.
What?
Is one of my brother's favorite people.
I don't know.
She's wonderful. No, she's wonderful.
Yeah,
my brother loves.
What's not to like about her?
I like her, but like you're just addressing your brother's tastes.
Queen Latifah and Rachel Ray are his two favorite women. Oh. And Jennifer Lopez. Three favorite women.
Jennifer Lopez is number one, right?
I don't know the order. No, Rachel Ray's number one. My really? Brother is like a really like avid cook and like has a bunch of the Rachel Ray like cooking products.
Oh, I see.
He's one of those ladies that like orders like fucking like spatulas and shit because Rachel Ray
told him to.
Yeah. Yeah. We had tickets to the Rachel Ray show. We had to drop out. We couldn't go. Somebody got sick.
Wow.
We have tickets to be in the audience, the Rachel Ray show, because that's my brother's chick right there. Queen Latifah. $70 million. That means I just won this week's edition of
Damn.
How many Drew Carey?
Oh man.
All right. You crazy kids, let's get out of here. This is quite the roller coaster of a pod.
Yeah.
Coming up this week on the site, 2 cents, we're going to talk about Nick's wedding and I'm sure a bunch of other wild things in the world.
I found a TV, Michaela and I found a TV show while we were out there too that I got to tell you guys about.
Oh, can't wait to hear this.
What kind of program? Like what country? Is it American?
Yeah, it's American.
Okay.
California, okay. Very specifically.
Was it a reality television show?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh boy. Oh yeah, he says, oh yeah.
Can I get a little tease?
No. Oh, okay. It's such a short program. Any tease would just be the whole. That'd be the whole bit.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay.
So listen to that. Movie Hall of Fame. We just did a Dealer's Choice episode. We'll have another one coming next week. We do that one every other week. So check that out. Just put out a video on YouTube about Norm Macdonald, who we talked about at length. So go check that out. People seem to be enjoying that one. Subscribe. We are 3 subscribers away from 1,000.
If you
are 997.
If you are a listener to any of these podcasts, you have a YouTube account and you aren't subscribed to us, just do it. Really, I mean, You can unsubscribe.
We're right there.
Later.
We are right there.
But just help us get over that finish line.
I got another 20 yeah. this week. Come on, guys.
Yeah, it's not hurting you. Just do it.
Three-way.
I'll give you a dollar. Send me your Venmo.
Don't we know three people?
Send me your Venmo and I'll give you a dollar. I mean,
Nick will Venmo you a dollar.
The first three people.
I'll Venmo you
$5. Who can prove they subscribed and send me their Venmo. I will give you a dollar.
Don't unsubscribe and then we knock down to $9.96. Then you go back
that'll
up.
That'll hurt our feelings. You got to do it in good faith.
Put it in the Discord. Put a screenshot of your subscribe. No, take a video of yourself clicking the subscribe button in real time. And then put it on the Discord and Nick will Venmo you a dollar.
I don't like this, guys. It's some controversial stuff.
This because you feels like we're rigging something.
I was going to say, we're going to become super popular. They trace this back and they're going to realize they paid off their subscribers.
It would be easier to make fake accounts at this point and just do it ourselves.
This is some electioneering going. This is some voter fraud shit.
They paid off their subscribers with exactly $3.
Just let us get that custom URL.
That's right.
Yeah, you need 1,000 for Google to sanction you as a real human being. Google doesn't even believe you're
real.
It
means that we matter. It only matters if 1,000 people care what you have to say.
Right.
So let's get over the hump. We're three away. And then, yeah, one more week of musicals next week. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but we're going to make it good. Going to end on a high note, I hope. No pun intended. and then the spooktacular starts
October.
Spooktacular.
And lucky for you, Nick, Adam and I have found the perfect film to watch week one.
Oh,
it's
I'm
called
excited.
Malignant. It's called Malignant.
It's in theaters right now, isn't it?
It's in theaters and it's on HBO Max for a limited period of time. You have
isn't
a
there also another? There's quite a few horror movies coming out or are out right now, huh?
I've seen a few good ones.
Candyman is that?
I didn't see Candyman. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
You can see Candyman if you want.
I don't know much about it.
You can see that.
I almost went to a movie today, so I was looking at the lineup. That's all.
You can see Halloween Kills, I guess, coming to the theater soon. I mean, you can see a lot of things. But
wasn't there a Trick or Treat like movie that came out recently in the past year or so? I'll track it down. We'll find some fun stuff. We'll have a fun month.
Down,
Point being, Malignant is coming the Malignant. First week. Don't you Got worry. It. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there clamoring for our thoughts on Malignant because it's a doozy.
Yeah,
I'll watch it this weekend.
Okay. Sounds good. Until then, I love you. Congratulations, Nick and Thank Michaela.
You. Thank you. She's right here over my shoulder, hovering.
And until next time, you've all been so very, very naughty.
No.
Rest in peace, Norm MacDonald.